been interesting. And what I want to focus on a little bit is my role as an agronomist at a farmer-owned co-op and what I do for farmer meetings. I will tell you that the podium speak is not what I do. In general, I have a small group grower meeting, so I do expect you to interrupt and ask questions at any time because that's what I'm used to. And I think it's fairly clear from a lot of studies that have been done that most farmers source their information primarily from their local agronomist. And there's not much dispute on that. They like to have local information, and they usually have a local consultant that they're working with, whether it be at a retail location or whether it be someone they've hired. And just to talk about a little bit about myself, I am an agronomist at a farmer-owned co-op, a very large farmer-owned co-op, as a matter of fact, primarily working corn and soybeans, I write nutrient management plans, I sell fertilizer. I'm also an elected director of the Iowa Soybean Association, so farmers in my area have elected me to represent them for in the checkoff and regulatory and lobbying groups. So I cover 8 counties there, represent 8 counties. I'm in the advisory council for the On Farm Network, working with Tracy, and I'm on the Green County Soil and Water Conservation District, not as a voting, but as an advisory. I'm an associate member there, and I also have a farm, and my husband and I own a farm, and we have a young couple that farms for us. We crop share, so pay 50% of the inputs and get 50% of the crop. And the young family that farms for us takes the other half and does all the work. And I've been very involved with Iowa State University on working with many of their projects. And that has been over the years. And that's really how I got started in this. About 18 years ago, Tracy Blackmer's father, Dr. Fred Blackmer, called me up one day. We live in the same small town about 40 miles west of Ames, which is where Iowa State University is located. And he asked me if I knew of any farmer who would be willing to do some on-farm research with him, and worked in particular had liquid swine manure that he could do long-term research on managing liquid swine manure and nitrogen management there. So that's how I got involved in this, with just one simple phone call, and it has morphed into a large amount of projects that I work with on basically a voluntary basis, and I spend a huge amount of time on it, which I, don't get me wrong, I do enjoy it. And what it has allowed me to do is support real testing in the real world. I am a certified nutrient management planner, TSP. I work with DNR, NRCS, and I set up lots and lots of replicated field trials, strip tests with the growers that I work with. And what we're trying to do is, in many instances, change behavior. And I've been to lots and lots of large group meetings, lecture formats for farmers. And you know, the expectation is that you're going to know your audience. Not just that they're farmers in central Iowa, but you need to know what the farmer is, a lot more about that farmer than just that they farm in Iowa. And I think Bianca and Tracy both showed slides that indicate the differences in just water rainfall alone and what that can mean for management differences on an individual basis. And the farmer themselves are the best experts at their own operations. And sometimes that's overlooked when you're giving a lecture format to farmers. So we like the interactive basis and the small group focus. The resources given to farmers can be limited. And one of the examples here is not to disparage these kinds of things, because they are useful tools, but the corn, I don't do this very often. The nitrogen calculator calculates out a single number, that's how much nitrogen you should be using. And our tests in our county clearly indicate that there is a variability. There is a range, there is different conditions that indicate the optimum nitrogen rate on an individual grower's field. So it would be nice and convenient to use a single number, but we know that's not correct when we're looking at multiple operations, multiple. I work with a lot of swine producers. We've moved in our area because of many of these tests to side dress operations. We have fall anhydrous, so many different operations. The main thing is growers are doing what they're doing because they think it's the best thing they can do. Economically, very in tune anymore to environmental aspects that they're working with. And if there is a change that needs to be made, it needs to be compelling. It needs to be based on that personal grower's, what it's going to be best for their own operation. So it needs to be very compelling to them that it's going to be financially beneficial and they need to be capable of doing it. They need to have the right equipment, the right resources. They're looking for a better way, the best way, the better way. And in this particular instance, you can see this, I don't know if you can see it from back there, but the corn in the foreground versus the corn in the background. The corn in the background is much darker, greener, and taller than this in the foreground. And they were told if they would side dress, things would be so much better. And that isn't necessarily what happened in this particular case. So there is a mindset from many experts that the grower would just be willing to do a single process or a single application or a single change to their operation, it would be best. But we have found that just isn't true. And again, this is the different soils in our state. And to make recommendations for my friend Brian up in this area would be much different than me, who lives right here in the Des Moines lobe soils, versus my friend Cliff that lives down here and has had flooded, most of his fields were flooded for most of the summer. So these are different kinds of scenarios that we need to be addressing in small group situations with at a local level, whether that be a county level. I'm not sure what that level is. And when we have small groups, or it's very difficult to bring in, and I'm speaking from experience, to say that to bring someone in from a university or NRCS or an agency, the suit and tie look, and try to take information from them back to my operation. Whereas Denny here, he's local. He can tell me exactly what's going on in his operation. You saw Tracy show that information on his crop rotations and his manure application and his nitrogen applications and the change in behavior that he has been able to do just because of the trials that he's had on his own farm. Because Denny does side dress where he needs to. The other thing we want to look at here is how is it easiest to process information? What does this graph right here mean versus this is my field right here, and I can see I have differences visually. I can just snap that out in an instant. I can see there's a huge difference in what's going on in that field in the strips. Do I know what it is? Maybe not without looking at the graph, but just looking at the graph is not enough. Farmers are not used to sitting in a classroom. I have a terrible time sitting and listening to lectures personally. And so we have a lot of interactive group discussions, usually about 20 people sitting around looking at their own information, putting their own information up on a screen similar to this, and having those discussions about their own farms and what kinds of things happened out there and what kinds of things could be changed. And and they want to take actions. And I think Bianca showed this picture too, of when we were able to look, to come in and make some changes late season with some new equipment that's been available to us recently over the last several years. And that's also been something that's happened recently. We haven't been able to do these adaptive management type things without the tools, and the tools are becoming available, and so we can do that. So I personally would like it if you'd ask some questions, but the lecture format for farmers, just it just doesn't work as well. And so in general, we have a small coffee style type meeting of 20, 25 producers, somewhere around there. And the reason we do that is because in a lecture format, they just don't come to our meetings in that format. If you just say you're going to have a lecture, you're going to have a speaker, that just doesn't work. They're not focused on maybe what that particular farmer's needs are. If they want to question what their own processes are, and you're talking about something that, a research plot that was done in eastern Iowa, and my farmers are in west central Iowa, it's not as clear for them. Tracy wants to know who else is in the group meetings besides myself and growers. And generally, in my particular group meeting, I usually have a leader such as Tracy and some of the people who are actually doing the on-farm research with us. Matt Sweeney, who is coordinating the efforts for me, who is on staff at Iowa Soybean Association. No, we don't have any. No. No. We have. It is just farmers talking to farmers with myself and somebody independent like Tracy. Or I have had other speakers, but it's very limited. We're looking at figuring out what's going on their own farms, and not selling them products. That's not what they're looking to do in general. They can do that on a one-on-one basis with their consultant, but whether that be me or someone outside of the co-op. But no, we don't have agency people. We don't have sales people. I don't know when I've had a crop protection meeting that we've had sales people in, and my farmers won't attend them. I've tried it, they don't attend. How often do I what?
How often do you have grower meetings?
Well, I have grower meetings, generally speaking, and Tracy can attest to this, is I will call him up and said, we got 3 inches of rain last night, can we have a grower meeting in the morning? And that process works very well, because I know they're out of the field. I know that I have time then, because I'm not in the field, and it's very reactive to specific events and specific circumstances that, okay, we've had this rain event, we think we've had large nitrogen losses, or we don't have our side dress on and we're having a rain event during this side dress. What kinds of things can we do to address those events and circumstances? But that's the nice thing about the way we can do these meetings, is they're very reactive, very quick. It's a single phone call, then I send out an email to the group and maybe make a few phone calls, and it's done in a matter of a few hours.
But Tracy's pretty grumpy after you call them at 2 in the morning.
Not yet.
No,
we... usually I call him in the morning at 7 for the following morning. so we do this very quickly and very reactively based on the circumstances that are happening right then. And then a lot of times we'll meet again in the fall post-season to review what's happened, and then maybe one more time as all the results come about. So maybe three times a year we go over these in detail with the farmers, and then during the year I'm talking with them on an individual basis.
For the scheduled meetings, do you generally...
You mean the unscheduled meetings?
Versus unscheduled. For the scheduled meetings, do you usually feed the producers?
Oh, donuts and coffee, that's my big expenditure. No meals.
No meals.
No, sorry. Does that mean you're not going to come, Chris?
I've heard if you feed them, they'll come.
Well, and I hear that too. I hear that exact same. But if you're really meeting the needs, a cup of coffee or a soda will get. And they must think I'm meeting their needs because they always show up for a soda, maybe a donut. Soda and coffee and donuts is all I ever serve. And we usually have a mid-morning after livestock chores and trying to really adapt to what they need and what they want and what works for them. Because they all live within 20 miles, so. And once again, I think this is a really important point, is because they're looking at data from their own area, from their own fields, and from their neighbors' fields. And you might find that to be somewhat conflicting, that they're sharing their data with their next door neighbor who might be wanting to rent that ground from them at some other time. But the dynamics in the group that I'm working with are very maybe unique in that sense, is they share everything, yields, practices, cost of production, you name it, and they're willing to share with each other. And I think it may be because we started so long ago with really a lot of unknowns when we started this group. And they found that their data, it has become credible to them and to their neighbors. Now, to address the question, I think you had a question about TSPs coming from out of state. That was an issue. We had that issue where we had an EQIP project and we had TSP come from out of state, dump off the plans and leave. I've actually talked to Chris about that a little bit too, is I would hope that would never happen again, and that needs to be addressed. I too find that to be an issue. And the problem, even more of a problem, was I was a technical service provider locally, and it really cut into my income to take that out of state, and then I still had to basically babysit that project on as they left the state and left me with my clients with a nutrient management plan that I had not written. And then here's some of the good things we have done with the group. Using guided sampling, using in-season remote sensing and GIS. We look at soil types and stress areas for our sampling. We have 52 grower participating, which is over 60% of the operators. We have 320 composite samples. Then we do individual and aggregate results. So I know this looks complicated from back there and you cannot see, but the main point is each individual farmer, their data is confidential. They know their number, which is along the bottom, and then this is their nitrates in parts per million. So in 2005 in West Buttricks Creek, which is a watershed in my area, we did these stock samples and each farmer can compare themselves and each sample within themselves and within to everybody else within the group. So this is an example of what we would put up at a farmer grower meeting, and then they have their own individual results which are handed to them individually. So
the unit on the left at the top, say where that you got that one outlier. I mean, I just can't read what our number is up there in parts per million.
Up Here, on the top line right there?
Yeah, I mean, what do we have on the left side there? What's that number?
13,000.
The lines are the different groupings that.
The lines going across here are just the numbers. These are where we want to be. So this too is some of the group data that we have been able to accumulate. And there again, I know you cannot see the detail, which is not really that important that you see the detail. The main thing that we want to point out here is that we accumulate this, all these data points from all the different growers, and then they're able to look at themselves within the group data. So we put forth all the information. We go by the crop, the form of nitrogen, whether it was had pre-plant nitrogen or history of manure or all those kinds of operations. So they can compare themselves within the group, by themselves, within other people within the same management practices or different management practices. And so this is just strictly the group that I work with, and then we do that with other groups too, and then a statewide cumulative database, which is online. On the soil nitrates, yes, they are. These are stock. This happens to be stock nitrates here. When we do the soil nitrate testing, yes, it's 1 foot. And then there's multiple ways of looking at your crop, and that's from the ground. This is one same field from the bin site, and I don't know if you can see the irregularity in that crop. And then we also took aerial photos of that. And in this particular field, it was a drag hose and swine manure and misapplication. At a very small level, you can't even see or distinguish it with the yield monitor because it's angled across that field, and yet we can distinguish these with our aerial photos we're doing on all of our research plots. This one was ironically just found because it was a field next to one of our research plots, and so we were able to see this. We just found it, not purposefully, but we were able to find this kind of problem area. And here's the things that, as I've stated before, the key things I think in working with small farmer groups is the two-way learning. The interactive learning, which is we tried to demonstrate today with multiple different formats and developing plans for evaluation and then sharing the results, and which is a unique opportunity, I think, is the sharing of information and all the data. And the way we source all the data. We share everything just with confidential. Each grower gets only their own information, but where they stand within the group.
Michelle, I have a question about when you share the data. The results are showing that have been seen already today that all the time there's a decrease in it, you know, an average decrease in nitrogen sales.
Oh.
And I'm just curious, as a co-op agronomist, job probably relies on sales. Now, how does this adaptive management process help you if you're going to decrease in sales? Because that's a complaint I get from many fertilizer dealers. I don't want to participate with you because I see results showing that you're going to reduce nitrogen sales.
That is an argument I hear a lot from my coworkers, even within the co-op where I work. And within the industry, which I, on a personal level, I don't find that to be a problem. I am an incentive-based salesperson. The more I sell, the more money I make. And I've had this discussion with the university, with my boss, with many people. It seems that that would be a problem to sell less N to an individual grower, but The way I look at it is that my credibility is more pertinent than my sales, in that the more credible I am within the local area and within the industry, I think the more sales I could get, because I'd be selling less to more people. So I have tried to increase my credibility versus my individual sales to farmers, and I can pretty much show that with the data I'm using here with the individual growers, because they see what's going on. So yeah, I have decreased sales to individual farmers, but maybe not totally. I mean, my total sales are not down. It's my sales to individual farmers are down significantly.
Is there a shift in the industry, though, to move more toward service-based than so much focusing on the fertilizer sales in and of themselves for you as a co-op agronomist? I mean, is that a discussion in your
circles? It's a discussion, and I know that, in particular, the European model of the consultant being completely different from the retailer is one that I personally would like to see, a little bit more move toward that, more service provider. I don't know if they have to be completely different, but I think it's difficult to get that from where we've been from a free service to a paid service. The model is difficult, but we're trying to move that way within our co-op. The problem is it's not an industry push, co-op to co-op. That's how some people sell. I'll give you a free application. I'll give you free this. I'll give you free that if you'll buy your stuff from me. It's not the model I would like to work under, but it is the model that's out there right now in Iowa.
Especially being a grower-led co-op?
Yes, it is a farmer-owned co-op, which makes it difficult to, yeah, it's a conflicting, and when they do own part of it, they feel that they want to have a say in how it's run. And they do, they have a board of directors that dictate some of those practices. And I think we covered a lot of this when, like I said, it rains and we call a meeting very quickly, and we do go over their information. We go over whether or not we need to make some adjustments, what we can do in the future, what we have done in the past. So very reactive. And this is one of my favorite sayings: farming looks mighty easy when your plow is a pencil and you're 1,000 miles away. So sometimes when we look at the regulatory structure from a farmer's standpoint, that's kind of how you feel. And sometimes the same with when you look at industry people. Most of the main offices are sometimes in Europe or even on the East Coast, and they're dictating how we're going to sell product or work with farmers on individual products. And so we're looking at the trust. And farmers are doing what they're doing because they think it's the best, the most economical. They're not doing it because they think it's the worst, obviously. They are doing what they think is best. I'm hurrying very much because the time lady is waving at me. And so when we're doing the guided stock sampling and those kinds of things, we're looking at specifically in their fields where they can see they've been taken, and we're giving them aerial views of what's happening. Any questions? Yeah.
I'm a research agronomist, and I get great invitations from the county agency to go to meetings and give talks in a conference, lecture-type setting, and I'm very surprised at the lack of questions I get at the end of a talk. And I'm wondering if that's because of the limitations that you brought up, or if it happens to be because of my material. What did you suggest should change in this traditional situation?
Well, and I think we've tried to demonstrate that here a little bit today with, we basically forced you people to participate in our discussion and the learning process. And one of the you know, I don't know whether that's right or wrong, but maybe smaller groups, you know, there is a huge intimidation factor with farmers who are used to running their own business, which is usually, in our area, a small business situation, making their own decisions. It's different than talking to a student or somebody who's used to listening to that kind of, you know, sometimes I think it's just overwhelming. That's how I feel anyway. When I go to lectures, the information just becomes overwhelming. You don't even know what to ask. So that's why the interactive process that we've used here. And I think, Tom, you call it ask a question with a question or answer a question with a question, the participatory learning.
One of the things in your meetings, which ones I've been involved in, is they had data local in it, so it wasn't talking about data they didn't know. There's at least somebody in there. Somebody was in the meeting that had data on the trial, so if you were talking about
right.
like a fungicide, it wasn't the general, here's the company statement. It's, hey, here's what happened on this guy's farm.
Right, so, and normally we put up the farm, and in the group that I work with, I've worked with the group for 18 years, so it makes a little bit of difference there. But you put a field up on the board, and there's some what we might say was a huge issue that you can see from the air, and somebody will always stand up and say, "That's my field, and it yielded this," or "This is what happened," or. I mean, we've been able to share very well by having an interactive small group where they're looking at their own particular situation, or they'll say, "Would you put up my field so I can so we can look at it in front of the whole group?" So I think question them, maybe not ask them to ask you questions.
Yeah, I think Sandy Bell in the next talk will cover some of the reasons why interactive sessions work better than. Why learning occurs more often in those types of settings, interactive settings. So thanks a lot, Sheila, for an interesting presentation. Show of hands.